I'll never forget the first moment when I walked in Kyo Cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 71st Skin On Podcast.
As it goes on, it starts to increasingly sound like the Oscars, doesn't it? As you get nearer to their number, which is the 80s.
Just as long and pretty much just as pointless.
No. Well.
Yeah.
Maybe.
No.
Philip has abandoned us to go west.
Where the air is clear.
Go west.
Life is peaceful there.
Go west.
We can start life new.
Go west.
This is what we're going to do. Okay, it is National Poetry Day, ladies and gentlemen.
That's our gift to you.
That is our gift to you.
That was appalling. Anyway.
So, in lieu of Philip being here, Jason, do you want to start?
Yeah, come on. What did we watch? Yes. What did we watch? Yes, this is an interesting one. I've got three, I guess. Well, two certainly that I want to talk about. One is my one of my CX boys, Quiz Show.
Oh,
which I love seen. It.
Yeah. It is great.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it since I saw it when it came out in 1951 or whatever it was. But 20 odd years ago.
94.
I think it was 94, yeah. It's fantastic. Really, really good. Great cast. It's one of those kind of, I don't know, kind of quiet epics. If you know what I mean, it's very focused, very narrow, but it opens out really, really well.
Yeah.
And the Red Resurrection is great. Vine's very, very young.
Yeah. It's charming.
John
Van Dorian.
Rob Morrow, when he was going to be a thing back in the day. And then John Turturro, who's great. It's excellent. Really, really good. I enjoyed it much more kind of than I thought it would again, but it's been a long time I've seen it, but it's holds up very well.
It's sort of got forgotten a bit. Yeah. I think when it came out, everybody loved it, and then it sort of faded out.
I did. It's not much of a conversation, dude. You don't hear about it much at all, but I'm really glad I watched it. It was really good.
I like films of that sort of era of the TV, because I really like Good Night and Good Luck as well.
Yeah.
But that's sort of what I was thinking of, the sort of picture of 50s America through the evolution of this sort of new medium of television.
Yeah. No, it's great. Well recommended. Do you think myself and Philip went to see Mean Streets in 35mm in the Lighthouse on Tuesday night, and it was glorious. A very appropriate scratchy print as well. It was kind of nice and scratchy, and sound popped a little bit here and there, and it just fit the film, the kind of raw feeling of the film as well, really, really well. It's much funnier than I remembered. I haven't seen it in a few years. Kind of De Niro and Keitel, I was coming across almost Landon Hardy kind of double act at points in it. De Niro is sensational and makes you sad anew of how appalling he's become. But
you mean you didn't like The Intern, Jay?
I wasn't a fan of a film I haven't seen, I have no intention of seeing ever.
Good call.
But Mean Streets is great. It's much energetic and fun and bonkers, and the soundtrack is great. It's just glorious. And a treat on 35mm. And my last one was, which I watched last night, Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Oh, hey. That's going to be fun. Go
on. Okay. This is interesting. I hadn't seen the cinema, so this was my first watch. And I liked it. I mean, it's good. It's a necessary film, I would say.
Yes.
It's a palate cleanser. Yeah, it's almost an apology for the prequels for starters. It's always like, you're in safe hands now. Don't mind all that thing over there. We'll just push them out of the way a bit.
The bad man's gone.
Essentially. And
he was just blowing up Jar Jar Binks away from
the collective memories of a generation can now rest easy in some ways. That Abrams saying that, like, okay, here's what you remember from back in the day. Here's your older characters, and here's your new characters coming in, and we'll meld it together really well. We'll give you a lot of nostalgia, good feels, but subtly and quietly update it as you go. Yeah. So that by the time this film's over, we can move on what their real business is of, I would imagine.
That's the thing, right? It got a lot of criticism for being basically nostalgia.
It's very nostalgic, but it works for the most part.
I think it works for that reason. I think if Episode 8 or whatever is going to be the same thing, it will be disappointing.
Yeah, I suspect it won't be.
It won't be, which is like Rian Johnson directing a Star Wars film is actually... Yeah.
Looper was a huge fan. So
and Breaking Bad.
All the stuff he's done is great. And I'm fine with that as a director. A couple of issues. The main one for me, and I feel kind of bad saying this, but I have to say it. Ren is a great character, right? No argument to that, right?
Okay.
As a thing. Daisy Ridley is pretty terrible.
That's Ray.
Oh, sorry, Ray. Sorry. Daisy Ridley is not good.
She has sort of like Keira Knightley style thing going on, I think, where there's...
I'm hoping there's a kind of... if you remember the first Harry Potter film where the actors kind of grow into the roles, and I suspect that may happen here, but I think she kind of stands out like a sore thumb in terms of acting terms.
I think it's the same thing with, say, Mark Hamill in the original Star Wars. Hamill was the least interesting cast member as the most least
maybe
interesting
so.
Character.
There's meant to be a naivety to her, and she's not. She's meant to be a fish out of water.
Oh, fine, but I think that the character is supposed to be fish out of water. I think, as an actor, I think she's...
But I think the character is also meant to be bland. Like, if you look at the rest of the film...
Fine, but she's not very good, though.
Okay.
Even at being bland. You know? I hope she grows into it. Like,
she's
like her personality.
Pretty badass at the lightsaber.
Yeah, fine with all that. But I just... When she starts interacting with proper actors, it's a little glaring for me.
Okay.
I said I hope she grows into it. The character is great.
I would agree with... The character's great.
I like the character. I like the idea of the character, and the action sequence, everything is terrific. But
I kind of read the blandness as an expression of the character. Like, the character is the most conventional of the three leads. Like, the other two leads are, like, the whole point is that they're characters who would not necessarily anchor a Star Wars film. A former stormtrooper and a pilot who is not a chosen one.
It's the love story film, right?
Yeah,
it's the love story film.
One of them takes the other's jacket, and they hug. Like, the bit where they hug,
it's like the end of Die Hard.
Yeah,
it's like, ignore the wife, go straight to hell.
Well, more so, Paul Dameron seems to have a thing for Ray or for what's his name? The Finn.
Finn.
Yeah. So
Finn is into it as well.
Yeah,
he kind of likes Daisy Ridley, I
don't know.
I would
love the film wants him to like Daisy Ridley more than he likes.
much like Jay. Attitude. I would actually love it if, you know, the way that the first trilogy has this really, in hindsight, creepy romantic triangle between Luke, Leia, and Han.
Yeah.
I would actually love it if the sequel trilogy's romantic triangle, Finn was the pivot point. Ray loves Finn, but Poe loves Finn.
It may well turn out to be that way.
BB-8 loves Finn and he wins.
BB-8's great. BB-8 can't really argue with. Kylo Ren is a bit silly.
It's the temper tantrums.
It's the whole point.
It's off-putting. It's really off-putting.
He's meant to be a badass Darth Vader.
Yeah, and he's meant to subvert that.
Yeah.
In the same way that making a film about a stormtrooper is sort of playing.
They irritate me though. Okay. But for the most part, it's fine. I enjoyed it. It was a very successful attempt at doing exactly what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And that's
Abrams film. I think Abrams is very good.
I agree. I think he's done a fine job.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, for rebooting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There.
Grant, so I watched, because I watched Friend Request last week, I felt obligated to watch Unfriended this week.
Okay.
And it is much
better.
I heard it's good.
It is actually really, really good. So Unfriended is a social media horror, but it's a social media horror that actually understands social media. And
what a change.
I know, what a surprise. It's almost as if it was directed by somebody under the age of 60. But what really interested me, I got a recommendation to watch it on my laptop. And because it works better. The entire film unfolds through the screen of the lead character. So, for example, she adjusts playlists, she goes on to Google, she uses Facebook, she uses Skype. Actually uses more than one social media platform, unlike another social media horror film, which we'll get to later. But it's very well done. It's maybe not really that scary, which is probably the only flaw in it, but it's very clever. It's very well constructed. It understands what it's talking about in a way that Friend Request doesn't, in that it doesn't basically... It's not the story of a bunch of cool kids who are being picked on by that creepy emo. It understands cyberbullying tends to happen to people who are socially excluded. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I want to get to that. Very good things. More good things, though.
I wholeheartedly recommend, and I recommend, you know, the way you should always watch a film on a big screen, watch this on a small screen.
Okay.
You can almost get away with watching it on a tablet. And then, what else did we watch? We watched Mooney Family Movie Night. Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs.
I do. I like him a lot, and it's the biggest problem.
It's very stagey.
It is.
I kind of like that.
But it's an Aaron Sorkin joint, so it is going to be
Aaron Sorkin. It would never be referred to as an Aaron Sorkin.
It's grand. It's not The Social Network, which is its biggest problem. I do.
Danny Boyle is not David Fincher.
Yes, surprise, shock, horror. And I feel really bad because I am quite partial to Boyle, and I like the boily touches to it, like all those wonderful establishing off-angle shots of lights. It looks and feels very much like an Apple product in that it probably doesn't perform the best on the market, but it looks really stylish, so you kind of want to get into it a little bit.
I'm a bit subpar Boyle, if you will, but that's me.
But yeah, no.
It shouldn't make any sense or anything. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
No, it didn't. We haven't reached boiling point yet.
No, we have not.
Sorry. That was a good job.
It's good. It's a great performance by Fassbender. Yes. The support that he has is
phenomenal.
It's really good.
I love that we have Jeff Daniels back.
Yeah.
I love that Sorkin kind of finally cast him free of the newsroom.
Which is appalling, by the
way. Oh, it is appalling. But it's like.
Never get a chance to slate that. Any chance I get.
Yeah, it was like he was shackled to that for like 5 years, and then he made Dumb and Dumber 2, and now he's free.
That's good. That makes me feel better.
It does. He was also very good in The Martian as well.
Yeah, he's a fine actor.
And he is a fine actor.
The best sequence in Steve Jobs is actually the two of them playing off each other. It's the sequence in the middle. So the film is structured in around three product launches. So it's your classic three-act structure.
The one in the corridor.
But the one in the corridor in the middle act where they cut back and forth to Mike Scully and Steve Jobs arguing over the future of Apple. And it kind of cuts across. But it's the point in the film where you feel the director's hand. Where it's the only point in the film that doesn't feel like a stage play. And I think that's probably the best sequence in the film.
I'd probably agree with that.
All right, cool. And then finally, I watched John Rambo. Just Rambo, the 2008...
I've actually never seen it.
It's quite good. It is, against all odds. It's not as good as his Rocky comeback. So like Rocky Balboa and Creed. It's nowhere in those leagues. But what I like about it, and I like it a lot more than the 80s nostalgia that we get at the moment. You know, the sort of the camp... the Expendables.
This wasn't made to be a throwback. This was made because he wanted to
bring closure to Rambo.
He wanted to tell more of a story that he was invested in. It's not a case of somebody else going back and mining some, you know.
Okay, but I mean, the same thing could be said of Stallone's work on The Expendables. He's going back and he's mining a genre that he helped establish, because he's credited as a writer or story consultant on those films as well.
Yeah, there's good money in that racket, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I assume that they didn't greenlight Rambo and the goodness of their hearts.
No.
But, I mean, what I like about it is that it is very much an 80s action throwback.
It's extraordinarily violent.
It is. It's extraordinarily violent. It's a little bit offensive in lots of ways that those 80s movies were offensive. It's uncomfortable to watch at points. It's not sanitized. It's not market tested. There's no plucky comic relief character.
You're kind of getting me interested in this
now. It is.
Now,
it is messy. It is ugly in places. It occasionally feels just a little bit like a grumpy old man telling that, like, it has that sort of Eli Roth, remember the Green Inferno?
I gave up on Eli Roth a long time ago.
Where he was like, I hate teenage slacktivists, despite the fact that slacktivists generally aren't the people who travel to the middle of the Amazon to actually help poor tribes. They're the people...
Cannibal Holocaust is what he's going for, except in deepest, darkest Amazon.
Yeah. But it's got a lot of this, you know, people go where they don't belong and don't listen to the gruff old man who knows much better.
Get off his lawn.
Yeah. And then he has to go back in and save all these lives by becoming like an unstoppable killing machine.
Which we know he is.
But it does it in a way that is not... It doesn't wink. There's no... horrible jokes. It just sort of, it gets in, it does it, it lasts.
I kind of respect that. At least it's kind of plain as straight as can be.
That's it. Like, you could honestly believe this would have been released in 1988. If it wasn't for all the blood.
And the Afghanistan War that needed the Rocky PR, number three.
Well, we're still in the Afghanistan War.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah. We're on the side of the angels this time, apparently.
We're involved in this. No, yeah.
The royal we, not
unlike the living daylights.
Western civilization, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, it's like that then.
For what's left of it.
All right then, and that was me, Niall.
So I rewatched Guardians. No, I.
That's a shout out to Philip.
I rewatched Ant-Man actually because
I liked Ant-Man quite a bit. I have to say.
I enjoy it.
I like bits of it.
I don't think it's up there with Marvel's.
Hang on a second. Are we saying here that we're talking about Marvel, and I like him more than anybody else in this table?
I think that's
this is incredible. That's a moment I want Mark. Wow.
Yeah, you're quite adamant about your fondness for the film.
You better believe it, man.
I like Paul Rudd.
Everyone likes Paul Rudd.
I like a number of the set pieces.
I like Mario Pena's phenomenal as well.
Yes. Those speeches that he has.
They are the best part of the film.
They're very, very enjoyable. That, I do
Thomas
like,
the Tank Engine!
I do like the Thomas the Tank
Engine. Okay, also Thomas the Tank Engine.
It's the best thing ever. I'd laugh my ass.
All you need
is
just Ringo Starr narrating.
It's the eyes on the lawn.
Going back and forth.
And the gigantic cockroach in that scene.
It's an ant.
And then there's also the...
The briefcase fight
is great.
Yeah, my problem with it though is that to get to all that stuff, which you can tell was in Edgar Wright's original sort of draft and vision for the film, you have to get through the obligatory Marvel structure, which means you have to do the tie-in, you have to do the teaser, you have to do the crossover with the appearance of like a second-tier affordable Avenger in the second
act. That was pointless. That scene was pointless. Absolutely pointless. So I understood it, why it's there, but I didn't...
Yeah.
And then, even
to get to like the best bit about it is the fight in the finale where everything goes small, literally small.
And it cuts out then, and it's like a train set. And it cuts away brilliantly over
to give you a sense of the scale. But
the train gets thrown up into the air.
The bit where he screams, the train's coming towards him, and then it just falls over.
Yeah.
But to get to that, you have to do the obligatory big Marvel fight sequence where you got the 9/11 imagery and the building collapsing.
The pacing was fine and it worked okay. It didn't feel as typically like it was in technically it was, but it didn't feel as bad. I didn't notice as much.
Okay,
I guess
it's noticed
funnier than a lot of them,
which made it more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, I'd say that the effects for the kind of miniaturization really remind me of the Incredible Shrinking Man. It was done very, very well. Which I was kind of surprised that it was worked out well.
What I really kind of like the period S touch, like even the black and white bit where they show the newsreel of, and I'm kind of like, I would love to watch that film, like the film set in the 60s with Michael Douglas as the man blowing up Soviet tanks. You know,
like
Incredible Shrinking Ant-Man.
I think it'll be a good sequel though. I mean, that's what I think.
Or arc in Asian character.
Which is sadly cancelled.
Has it been officially?
I think it has been not renewed.
This is disappointing.
That's very disappointing.
Yeah, you should. Anybody listening to this should get Carter.
Yes, what he says.
Yeah,
what he said about it.
Yeah. So I also watched Eddie the Eagle.
Oh, hey,
yeah, that's an enjoyable film.
Okay, didn't think you sore afterwards. Sore like eagle. You weren't a little over eagle to see it. Okay.
No, it is Hugh Jackman playing exactly the same role he had in Real Steel. I mean, almost exactly the same role. But it's very enjoyable. Taron Egerton is a charismatic guy. You know, you can see why he's in the short running for Han Solo.
Along with our own Jack Rayner.
Yeah, and the favors Ansel Elgort.
Which I would love.
Yeah, I'm on board with that idea.
Yeah.
Me too.
I wholeheartedly endorse this.
Because he's brilliant.
Oh, he is in, in Hail Caesar.
In Hail Caesar.
Would it be that it were?
Would that it were so simple?
Would that it were so simple? Would that it were so simple?
In the hand.
Why are you doing that with your hand? Say it like I say it. Would that it were so simple, trippingly. We wholeheartedly endorse Hail Caesar.
We do indeed.
Yeah, but Eddie the Eagle is an enjoyable family film. You know, it's that kind of.
Yeah.
It could have easily been made in the '80s. You know, it has that sort of
underdog charm to it. I imagine. Yeah.
Exactly, and Dexter Fletcher has now proven that he's adept at very many different genres,
isn't he? Though,
yeah.
I mean, some baffling stuff. I mean, I loved Wild Bill, and I caught about 10 minutes of. The Proclaimers musical. And I was like, I had to go out, and I was like, I kind of want to sit down and watch this now. This is weird. I'm not sure I like it, but I can't quite tear my eyes away from it.
That does seem right up your street, though.
I like Dexter Fletcher. Hey, he's good.
Yeah, so I recommend checking it out. It is still in the cinema. So we will move on to the news.
All right.
Okay, what do you got?
So, just today it was announced that NBC Universal's parent company Comcast is going to buy DreamWorks Animation.
Oh, yes, for $3
billion. $3.8 billion.
Okay. All right, the Spielberg
which is half, half the cost of Marvel, by the way. You know, so is
and
it
how worth? Much of a Star Wars can you get for it?
Yeah, pretty much half as well.
what are you buying with DreamWorks? That's what I want to know.
What's your intellectual like, property? Three like, Kung Fu Panda sequels, which we'll get to later.
Yeah, the Shrek franchises. And
how
the,
to
but
train
maybe
a
I'll play
how
it
to
out.
Train a dragon.
You say that, but like there are entire
wondering.
Theme parks built around Shrek.
Yeah, do you have DreamWorks Oriental, which is a big studio of, that
okay.
they've set up in Asia to sort of leverage that market, and Kung
yeah.
Fu Panda 3 did
and
incredibly
get,
well there.
And you get the staff as well, and the staff are... The staff give you your next Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, yeah and they also they have a very big role in TV,
yeah,
and they bought Classic Media, which owned Casper and some properties like that. And so
well, you'll probably get a ton of different things.
Yeah.
So listen, if you have a spare $3.8 million, this is not a bad investment.
No,
I don't sadly.
Viacom's not
bought.
Liquid at the moment.
No,
but Viacom are at the moment are looking to sell minority share in Paramount, and so they're using this the amount that has been spent on DreamWorks Animation as a sort of leverage for the buyers coming into Paramount on the basis that DreamWorks make two films a year and Paramount make 15. So,
but I think yeah, Paramount also have had some trouble with. Franchising, right?
They don't really have.
Yeah, one. That's it. They don't
yeah.
have a big one.
That's generally
that
trouble. The
problem,
that's
yeah.
that's the general diagnosis of trouble. You don't have any.
Yeah. I love sort of this talking about the behind the scenes sort of studio workings and stuff.
But see, Paramount came very close to having a few because they owned Thor for a while. They had Indiana Jones.
Well, they were the partners
and,
for Marvel starting
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they were the partner for Steven Spielberg and George Lucas
yeah.
with certain stuff. And
Halcyon days, I would suspect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now all they've got is Star Trek.
Ah yes.
Ah yes.
But they don't even know completely on that though.
No, they don't. The TV rights are still with CBS, which means neither of them can promote it without. Giving the other an advantage. If you're wondering why the 50th anniversary of Star Trek has seen little to no celebration, it's because Paramount don't want to promote CBS and CBS don't want to promote Paramount.
You think they're doing themselves a serious disservice here?
You imagine so, but
yeah.
I think you underestimate the amount of spite in mainstream
Indeed,
audience, you know?
Indeed.
This is Hollywood that released John Carter purely to screw over a previous Disney executive.
There you go.
But the thing is that, I mean, Paramount should have something. And Star Wars, the TV series, has gone into production now. The
yeah.
new one in Toronto.
Animation or?
Oh, so
new
Star Trek is.
Sorry.
With
yeah,
Brian
yeah,
Fuller
yeah.
producing.
Yes.
And Nicholas Meyer.
I'm on board that.
I'm very on board with that. He wants Angela Bassett and Rosario Dawson.
All
over
it.
Get them. Yeah, I know. And rumors of an anthology of a shorter season run as well, which would be great. Because I've watched a lot of Star Trek, and when you produce 26 episodes a season...
Quality of Toll is pretty
yeah, occasionally you end up with ones where your main actors become a lizard.
John Q. Filler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, good news for Pursuit. It's off to Shanghai. So this is...
On holidays? Or?
Yeah, no, it's going to play in the Jackie Chan Action Movie Week at the Shanghai International Film
Sounds
Festival.
Like an all-time Shanghai, if you will.
Yeah.
So the Action Movie Week started last year. That was the inaugural one. And basically what it is about showing the skill involved in creating an action movie, primarily the skill involved in stuntmen and stunt driving and
okay.
that kind of stuff. And so this Pursuit has a lot of stunt driving in it, so that is what it's going to be playing as.
Yeah, good exposure in a market that Irish films, I imagine, don't get particular exposure.
Well, that's it, but Shanghai has had some limited Irish success there. Begin Again won there a few years back, and Song of the Sea won animated film there last year. So.
Not very good.
So there is some precedent for it, but Pursuit is a it's a very interesting film. You know the tale of Dermot and Grania brought up to
yeah,
and so and you know it's got great Irish cast: Liam Cullen and Brendan Gleeson, and then Ruth Bradley in the lead with Barry Ward, and so
okay.
you're
doing quite well there, I think. Yeah,
yeah, no, exactly. It's built on a solid foundation, and this should set it up nicely for that run because Shanghai is the only. A accredited film festival in East Asia or in Asia,
right.
So it's very it's a prestigious one as far as they go. So that's
so it should be Shanghai on the list.
Hopefully they don't get Shanghai down there.
So news from the
bad.
Government.
Our government?
Wait, there is a government.
I'm going to spin the floor up in a second.
The previous government. Section 481 increase.
And the podcast is now dated.
Yeah, the Section 481 increase comes into effect from the 1st of May. So, eligible expenditure to get the 32% back on is now €70 million. So now you can spend up to €70 million and get your money back.
Listen, can I make a point here? Is this for international funding?
Primarily.
So this was touted during the week, or certainly there was occasional somewhat misleading headlines that this is benefiting Irish film. Now, it does benefit Irish film in terms of technicians and work. But in the context of Irish filmmakers, this is probably not going to make much of a difference.
No, all our film expenditure in Ireland is up to €70 million.
Yeah, but most people...
No, but I'm saying it's eligible for the relief. So the thing is that if you're moving past €1 million, you're still eligible for the relief. Yeah. It's not that you have to make a €70 million.
Yeah.
The increase in the cap only benefits the international co-productions. Yeah.
That's all it meant.
Yes.
But I mean, we consider the co-productions to be part of our film as well. So it helps the industry in that respect.
Like. Well, it depends. I mean, there's people that use the country for films that are not necessarily co-productions in the sense of...
Well, in order to get the relief, it has to pass a cultural test. So, does have to have Irish producers and creative talent involved in it. So it's not quite that simple.
Okay. This isn't Braveheart then?
No, it's not.
I'm curious, that's all.
Yeah, even if you get to stuff like that, that still helps tourism and stuff. You know, like I know people who come to the country and go up and visit the cooking Game of Thrones set from halfway around the world, you know. It is good for the economy, it's good for the country.
True. It's also in the north. This doesn't really help us. But anyway.
No, I know that's in the north.
It may well fly into Dublin, you know. So.
And plus, it'd be the whole Skellig Michael thing.
So. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So yeah, sure, it would be nice to have more of those in the country that we live in, as opposed to the north.
Well, I like
the political podcast.
I like to use it as one island.
no, it's steady on.
Irish is... You're from the island. That's how it works.
I'm not getting involved in this one.
You
can take that up with your comrades somewhere else.
This tax funding story got really political really quickly.
So the film boards, they released the details of who got what.
How much did I get?
Allocation. You did not get any.
God damn it. Next year.
Was the Q1 funding decisions for 2016. So, €200,000 has been allocated to a new Spanish-Irish co-production from the director of Rec called Muse.
It's been a while since anybody's cared what the director of Rec has done, I think. Unless it was Rec 5, because I know they're up to how many Recs there's
Rec 4.
Tyrannosaurus Rex, I think.
Sorry.
I did look Rec, though, back in the day.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Indeed.
Yeah.
This looks properly creepy. It's called Muse, and fantastic films here in Ireland are involved in
it. Okay.
Might be worth a quick recce then.
Yeah, okay.
We're not allowed that one.
Then we also see awards, a provisional offer of commitment, so this is where they haven't quite worked out how much they're going to give them to Savage Productions, who are the ones behind Pilgrimage. It's Rebecca Daly's new film, Mammal director of Rebecca Daly's new film, Good Favour. So.
I'm all behind that.
So this one she co-wrote again with her writing partner Glenn Montgomery, and it's about a young man who walks out into a forest and into the lives of an isolated Christian community that exists within the forest. And so
not a village, thankfully.
A village in reverse.
Except good. That's what it means, reverse.
So that should be very, very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
The plan is for it to be another European co-production.
I'm a huge Rebecca Daly fan, so
yeah. Kings End on Bruntless director Tom Collins and is getting has got a commitment for $150,000 for a new Irish language feature, Ahri, or Penance.
This is good though. I like seeing the Irish language features because we can't submit to Oscar then as well.
Cynical us?
Well,
never.
I think it's a good thing. I think there should be something every year submitted. I think I've said this before on the podcast.
Yeah.
I think money should be set aside for it. I think it's an international profile thing. I think it's the way to do it. And eventually you keep making them and something will hit. Something really, really good will get there and it'll actually make it. And it's a big thing and I think you should do it.
No, if you are committed to that aspect of culture, then yes, this is
the definitely, because we can't... It's the only way to get in. And it's our own goddamn language, though.
Yeah, there goes the romance of it.
But as our own film, as it kind of submitting to that kind of foreign language film, I think it's I think you're putting yourself, you're placing yourself in a very art house place in terms of how your films are. I think it's be a really good thing to do.
No, I agree. I think that it's imperative that we do more films.
Plus, most language, so on and so forth.
I'm just a fan of a broadness in general.
Then, number of animation projects received funding. This is the production funding section. So, the Brown Bag received production funding for Gilbert and Ali, which €200,000. So, this is a supernatural comedy series.
You see, Brown Bag opened a 35,000 square foot office now in
they
Smithfield.
Expanded in
it's
Smithfield.
Massive.
Yeah.
I went past it today. Good on them. I mean, because I remember the little tiny little office they had beside Fresh there, where it's just a door and upstairs, and they don't need a decent amount of space upstairs, but it's a bloody block.
Yeah, and,
fantastic,
and today it was announced that they are teaming up with Netflix and the BBC
for
Watch It Down.
Yeah, so.
I can't imagine being as gruesome as the original, but we can.
Traumatizing a whole new generation.
Yes. Excellent. Good on Brown Bag then.
Yeah. Salty Dog got a commitment of $150,000 for Brewster the Rooster, which is based on Clifford Parrott's series of the same name. So that also received some money from Broadcast of Ireland.
Yeah.
That RT Junior are going to air that. And then Cavalier Productions got $150,000 for Pablo, which is about a 5.5-year-old boy on the autistic spectrum, and so and how he interacts with other people, and so that's a very wordy thing, and and it will be great for kids to be aware of that. So
it's a good way of teaching it in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. So then documentary films. This one will you'll like anyway. Fergal Ward has been given money for a new film called Outside the Factory.
Excellent.
Then John Gormley is the father of globalization. So that's a green themed film, and then we have a provisional offer of commitment to Underground for their new project Bought and Sold from Kim Bartley, who did I Am Traveller most recently.
Very good.
So that they would, and so there's some interesting sounding projects coming up there.
Seriously, next year for me, as I'm telling you, next year.
Yeah.
Get your offers in now,
There's still three more quarters this year, right?
So we'll
you've got to ramp up to them.
Yeah, I've got to build up to the lad for next year.
Yeah.
Jamie Hannigan, he's working on a new screenplay called Airlock, and he's gotten funding towards that. It's if the film is set in the near future, it's a survival thriller about a desperate group of divers and research scientists trapped in a stricken saturation chamber at the bottom of the sea. So
my claustrophobia will not be able to deal with that.
We'll see how that turns out.
That's diving proper deep tension on the screen. That's
what was the Danny Houston film? Pressure.
Oh, Pressure, which was had issues.
It did.
But
it's okay.
It's always worth checking out. Stand By Guys, Robin Ronan Burke.
My boys.
Yeah. So they're getting development funding for Bags and Trev. Bags and Trev is a story of two lads who are in Sligo who are trying to get dates for their dames.
I think I can get a more.
I like Stand By.
That one I'm very interested in.
Also, Ronan Burke started my short film, so you know. I'm picking them up.
Conflict of interest.
Yeah, and Ron Burke was a lecturer of mine, but they're good guys. But
Lee Cronin, who directed the short Ghost Train, which if you can check it out, it is.
I shall.
Properly creepy.
Okay.
He's doing a new horror called The Hole in the Ground.
Is this a feature?
A feature?
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, he's going to direct with it's the story of a mother and son facing a dark force from the past.
I love those dark forces from the past. They're proper creepy.
So there you go. There's a load of other projects that have received sort of funding details are up on the site with synopsis for a lot of them.
Excellent work.
But it's looking. I mean, these are all shaping up to be. It's shaping up to be a good couple of years coming
That's
as well. Strange. I mean, we're coming off the back of a very, very, very successful.
It was a very good year.
It was a very good year.
Some
new Irish films that have gotten release dates in the past. So,
hit me with them
now. So we know that Love and Friendship is going to be out on the 27th of May. So that's I saw that the other day, and I totally recommend checking it out because
as far as say you love it,
it is very funny. I don't know if I go as far as say love it, but I'm definitely good friends with it. Yeah,
excellent.
It is very enjoyable. It's a Jane Austen comedy, so it's rare to see, but it is
with Stillman.
So you know, he, and it's got a great turn by Kate Beckinsale. Yeah.
It's been a while since Kate Beckinsale has popped up in anything.
Yeah.
Well, was it Underworld related?
Yeah, I think it was written Underworld, yeah. So.
She was in, she briefly in The Aviator.
She was.
That was what, 12 years ago now?
It was.
13?
Ken Wardrop's... Jeez.
They fly by.
Indeed.
Ken Wardrop's new documentary, the IFTA award-winning documentary, Mom and Me, is going to be released on the 15th of July. So as the FLA runs the week before, I'm pretty certain that it's going to show up there.
You may well be right.
This is why you are the king of Irish movie forecasting.
Yeah, it's just it just seems to be the right sort of place for that to go, does it not? And no, it's a perfect fit because it will play very well to the home audience. You know? So I'm really looking forward to seeing what we have coming out in the next couple of months, except for on the 27th of May as well, or towards the end of May, Price of Desire is out.
But we'll talk about that
when it comes out.
Yes. Indeed.
On to the top 10.
Oh.
So, at 10, Kung Fu Panda 3.
Earning that $3.5 million investment.
Billion.
$3.5 billion, yeah, sorry. Bargain basement. But it's, so three sequels planned, apparently.
Count the money now.
Oh, yeah.
Is James Cameron involved?
Yeah. No, these are actually going to be made.
Oh, right.
Are going to be good.
Let's manage expectations a bit there.
Sorry.
Although, in fairness, have any of the Kung Fu Pandas been bad?
I haven't.
Yeah,
I've only seen
one. The third one is the weakest, and it's just okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's not bad.
Yeah, it's bad enough as well, okay.
Yeah.
It's not Toy Story, you know.
Very few films are. Very few children's films are.
At 9, Pitbull, Noah Porzatsky.
Spec second week.
Yes.
Second week. Jesus, that's a pretty good gun.
It's polling quite highly, if you will.
Our apologies to our Polish listeners. That is, and
everybody else.
And for my pronunciation of the film.
Okay, apologies.
For no reason.
At 8, it's Sing Street.
Still hanging in there.
Yeah, now
pretty close to the million.
It has in the All Ireland one, if you include it.
Yeah,
Northern,
but we're not including that.
That's our metric system.
We're building tension here, not.
Yeah,
we're gonna get there.
It's slowly building.
Yeah,
Scandal podcast got really political this week.
Yeah, it's about 40,000 away. It should get there.
It absolutely will.
We'll see you next week. Join in. The tension
is
unbearable.
It opened in the States, as we were talking about last week, and it's expanded this week, so it's ticking over nicely there. Bono endorsed it yesterday, so that should help.
Well,
apparently, Bono was involved in the very early stages.
Bono was involved in negotiations.
Yeah.
They were going to do music for us,
but they were busy.
It didn't work out. So.
Jay's just heartbroken.
I'm rolling my eyes.
Yeah,
anyway.
Jay's just heartbroken here. But yeah, my aunt saw it and loved it. So, and it's getting great word of mouth. Like, I'm getting text messages from people saying, I didn't know it could be this good. Why didn't you tell me an Irish film could be this good?
It's
generating quite a response.
It's a fun film. It's not without its flaws, but it is very,
very,
very enjoyable.
Nice.
At 7, not without its flaws, is Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. So, Darren, was it 3 hours and...
Oh, the unrated extended cut is going to be 3 hours and 1 minute.
So we're into Godfather territory.
Yeah, just to measure your expectations. But I also just love the fact that Snyder couldn't cut another minute from it to make it a clean 3 hours.
I suspect it was 3.5 hours. He struggled to get 29 minutes off.
Well, this is the thing. Apparently the original cut was 4 hours long.
Oh, for the love of God, somebody stop Snyder.
Then they cut it down to 3 hours, which they thought was a workable version. And then he said, actually, no, I think I can get it down to 2.5 hours. And that is the version that was released in cinemas. But I was astonished to read that apparently when it played in Warner Brothers, it got a standing ovation from the executives, reportedly. which is quite ironic inside of how things turned out. Now, I'm fonder of the film than most. It is a very, very flawed film. But it's flawed in interesting ways. But, Yeah, it's interesting.
I have described it to multiple people who haven't seen it and have put them off, I think, by my description. Even though I was...
It was a positive description.
It was a description of events rather than me saying, this is what my thoughts on the film are. I didn't ask. I just said,
try and put the word in English. try to put what happens in this film in English and you sound crazy.
Yeah.
Here's a crazy thought for you as well. Apparently, I just discovered back in 2012, they wanted Tom Hanks as Lex Luthor. Can you imagine what a world that would be?
I'm trying to.
Yeah, apparently, yeah, yeah, yeah. And Jay's going to love this. They wanted him off the strength of his role in Cloud Atlas. There we go.
I don't want to say any of this. This is
up is down and black is white.
This is unusual.
Tom Hanks as Lex Luthor, the most lovable man in America, as the most famous second most famous supervillain in comics. What a world it would be. And he could have done it in his Irish accent from Cloud Atlas, just to make things even spicier.
Because Luthor is a well-known Irish surname. Yeah,
it's a great surname. But yeah.
Lionel Luthor is particularly Irish.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Interesting, interesting, interesting.
All right, so next up?
At six, a film that is is sinking its studio, pretty much. Huntsman's Winter War.
Really?
No.
Yeah, this is the studio that released Jurassic World.
No, I
think they can take a hit.
Exactly. Yeah. This has bombed.
You know what I discovered? Because I was looking at that poster, and I was looking at the names in the poster, and I was going, Charlize Theron, okay, she probably signed a contract when she did the first film and then renegotiated when they found out about the wages for Chris Hemsworth. Hemsworth probably signed a deal for two films. What the hell is Jessica Chastain doing in that? Apparently, she was contracted for two films for Crimson Peak. And, this is what happened.
And how did Emily Blunt get...
I have no idea. That I cannot account for. 2 hours worth of makeup.
You have a film, right, in which you have Academy Award winner Charlize Theron, right? You have Jessica Chastain, who's been nominated for an Academy Award.
And is generally regarded as
one of the finest actresses in the world. Right? You have Emily Blunt, who is great in everything.
And universally loved.
Yeah, and you have Chris Hemsworth, who is good, right?
Who is Thor?
He's Chris Hemsworth.
He's Chris Hemsworth, yeah. So
he seems
how
pleasant.
Do you feck that up?
Well, you put them in a sequel to the Snow White film that you made that was terrible.
There is that, yeah.
I'm fairly sure if you put them in Triumph of the Will, it would not make a good film. I'm going to regret that comparison.
I'm not entirely sure that they would work in Triumph of the Will. Chris Hemsworth would.
Chris Hemsworth really would, yeah.
But, yeah, oh.
I clearly haven't seen it, obviously.
Well, the thing, I think you'll find that nobody has. That's why it's doing so badly.
Yeah.
Then, at five, Friend Request.
Wow, it's in there.
It is terrible. It is a genuinely terrible film. Made by a German director using German money in South Africa, duplicating Southern California.
As you do,
where on what is clearly not Facebook, inhabited by witches. It is not a good film by any measure. Go see Unfriended. Watch Unfriended on a laptop instead. It is a much, much better film.
Good enough.
At four, Bastille Day.
Which strangely is released in the middle of April.
Yeah. Oh, there are more of those ones. There's a film coming out that's called The First Weekend in May, and it's coming out in September.
I mean, that's a missed opportunity.
You're marketing rights yourself. Also, speaking of marketing, I'm really disappointed that the tagline isn't Bastille Yourself. No? Oh,
yeah,
fine.
Fruit Bastilles. Oh, God.
Starring Idris Elba and one of those handsome men with no charisma from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
There are quite a few of those.
There are. Look, he's so pretty. Yeah, but he's terrible.
Let's put him in a movie and set it against a volcano. Oh, yeah, that sounds amazing, yeah?
I think that's the different pretty man from Game of Thrones who can't act.
I know,
they all look alike in the end.
You throw a rocky at him, will you?
Yeah.
At three, Zootropolis.
It's grand.
Yeah, Zootropolis is an enjoyable film.
Yeah.
Yes, and and it's making a incredible
film. Oh, it is, yeah.
It's going to pass the billion.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Who knew Disney knew how to market a film?
Between this, the Jungle Book, and Star Wars Civil War, it's like, good lord,
the amount of, they're just sitting on money 60 foot in the air.
Oh, don't worry, they still have the money that they have to ship to Robert Downey Jr.'s backyard to get him to do Iron Man 4.
And they have Rogue One, Star Wars Story, at the end of the year. No, they're not doing too badly.
I feel like a Star Wars story makes it sound classier than it is.
Oh, and Doctor Strange.
With its Asian mystic called the Ancient One, played by Tilda Swinton. With an Irish accent, who's apparently Celtic, but for some reason lives in like this weird Asian Orientalist fantasy. You heard about the screenwriter on the podcast.
Somebody said that they couldn't cast a Tibetan because that would have to recognize Tibet, and
that would offend the Chinese
China.
Mark.
Yeah. So like we couldn't make the character Asian because then they'd be Tibetan, and then we couldn't sell the film in China. And this is the screenwriter talking on a podcast. This is not like somebody in the office going, no, no, this is the reality. This is like, no, no, this is the story. This is the excuse that we go out and we tell the press. They'll love this. They'll understand. Nobody will have any issue with that.
Yeah, because whitewashing in Hollywood is definitely not an issue.
Yeah. Well, you heard about, was it Ghost in the Shell? Where?
Oh, yeah, where they actually tried to make Scarlett Johansson look more Asian.
I don't believe it was meant for Johansson. I think it was just background extras.
To give their film an Asian feel.
That's it. They wanted to give it a sort of a... God. Apparently they wanted to use digital technology to do Yellowface. Which is, you know, one of those things that you imagine should not be brought into the 21st century.
Or mentioned in any conversation.
Yeah, or sort of boasted about as well as an advance in technology.
Look what we're doing. Yeah. We're good people here. Yeah.
I mean, see, Blade Runner got around that by casting Asians.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a handy way of doing
it. Surprisingly. Yeah. What are the
simpler.
Odds?
It seems simpler.
Yeah. But yeah, it is crazy. And but we'll probably talk about that when the film is actually released.
Yes. Two, who doesn't love a bit of Eye in the Sky? Yeah,
Eye in the Sky is great. You know that the role for Helen Mirren was originally written for a man.
That's a sign of a good screenplay. If you can change the gender and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And yeah, great performances. Really well staged. Gavin Hood directs it beautifully. What I like is the cast is evenly distributed.
All forgiven for his Wolverine film.
It will never be forgiven. Never forget. Little saccharine in places, but wholeheartedly recommend it. Alan Rickman's last live-action role is...
And for that alone,
is... That is well worth a look. Never mind the fact is Helen Mirren, Ian Glenn, and all those sorts of wonderful other actors.
Okay.
At one, The Jungle Book, making a shed load of money, dropping just 16%.
It's just going to make all the money, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, until this week.
Well, yeah. What comes out tonight? Oh, yeah, Captain America Civil War. Yeah.
But yeah.
So Disney will have a 1-2 at the box office.
Good lord.
They'll have a 1-2 and probably a 4 again.
No, chances are the Zootropolis will go above Eye in the Sky.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
so they may have a 1-2-3.
There's nothing else that opens that's going to... I mean, I'm all for Son of Saul storing the box office, but I don't think that'll happen,
no. Yeah. No, there's nothing huge.
They won't happen.
Personally, I'd love to see Atlantic do... like record numbers with a documentary about the North Atlantic, not so much. Anyway, we move into the news. We start with Atlantic. Atlantic is very good.
Okay.
Right, it is very good. It's director of The Pipe, Richard O'Dowd, who I interviewed there the other day, and so the podcast will go up with the interview of...
Excellent.
Nice.
With Richard O'Dowd.
Podcast extra, finally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hold on. We did Rebecca Daly one recently.
Oh,
well.
Yeah. Sorry. Not so finally. Sorry, Rebecca.
Rebecca and Barry.
Sorry, Barry.
But yeah, no, Atlantic is really, really good. The story is about the fishing communities here in Newfoundland and in, so the Aranmore here and then in Newfoundland and in the north of Norway, and sort of compare and contrast of their relationship with the sea, their relationship with industrial fishing, and the pillaging of natural resources and all the rest. So that, to an extent, there's a big environmental message in there. But in a different way to the pipe is very much on point. The pipe is very much forcing an agenda. This sits back a little bit more and is a bit more balanced than that was. So it looks. Gorgeous, because they use all big seascapes and landscapes from around the ocean.
Is it dramatic enough, though, as a story, like, in terms of...
No, it's interesting, because it's well edited, and it's a tight 80 minutes, so
it's welcome,
and it's got Brenda Gleeson narrating it, so you're always going to listen to it. Because
that's a good voice to listen to.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, it is very, very much worth seeing, and it's a side of Ireland that doesn't really get shown that much, because we tend to look inwards rather than outwards with our story.
Yeah.
We look to the land, we look to the farming, we look to, we don't
well, we
look
are
that.
An island
we, but yeah we're surrounded by sea, we may need to have a look at that, you know. So
let's have a look-see then.
Yeah, so because only 1/10 of Ireland's land, you know, or the claim that we have on this planet is actually above seawater, the sea level, the rest of it's underneath, you know. So all the continental shelf that we have, about our territorial boundaries, like, go way beyond the island.
I did not know that.
Wait for global warming to punch that percentage up a bit. sorry, Sentry.
So, no, I I wholeheartedly recommend checking this out.
Okay.
But then the big film of the week is Captain America: Civil War, and for that I will go to Darren.
I wasn't the biggest fan. Everyone seems to love it, and it's easy to see why they love it. It's very gif-able. It's very light-hearted. It moves very fast. It has a large cast, but it handles them very well. It understands exactly what the audience wants from it.
So what's your beef, Darren?
What's my beef? Let me tell you, Jay, what my beef is.
Okay.
All right. I find it has some very serious tonal issues. I find that it's the Captain America film. It's the same problem I had with Winter Soldier, which is that it's sort of gestures towards these big thematic ideas, like the Nolan Batman movie ideas of using like superheroes as icons for commentary or for engagement with big ideas. So in Winter Soldier you had this idea of the surveillance state, or you had this idea of drone warfare, and in Civil War you have this idea of foreign interventionism, or moral responsibility, or collateral damage, and all this sort of stuff.
So what Batman v Superman was also
what Batman,
the same ground.
Yeah, the same ground, except Batman v Superman pounded any joy out of that whatsoever. And I admire that approach more than I enjoy it. On the other hand, Civil War doesn't... It spends its opening hour setting out all its characters and conflicts, laying out a status quo. So the basic idea is Iron Man and Captain America fight for reasons. That are related to the idea that some guy wearing an American flag on his head is traveling around the world doing superhero stuff in foreign countries that may or may not lead to people getting killed and dropping cities on them and destroying most of New York and blowing up buildings.
They're decent reasons, though.
They are
in some ways to say, like, hang on a second, lads.
Yeah, maybe calm down a bit.
Yeah,
and that's
you know when Thor or when the Hulk and Iron Man had a fight in the middle of downtown Nairobi, that may have not been the best thing in the world.
They have enough problems in Nairobi
without sort of
their infrastructure is terrible.
Act of God of Thunder.
Yeah.
So it starts out with this interesting thing, and again you have like the character's called Captain America. He can't help but be political. So you've got all this stuff that could apply.
He becomes president in the comics, for Christ's sake.
More than that, in the 70s, they wrote an arc, and you'll never guess which president this was, in which Captain America discovers a conspiracy inside the US government that points to the president, who, when confronted by this by Captain America, commits suicide in front of him. This is in 1974, a year after Nixon's resignation.
I
wonder who that could possibly be. And then you have stuff like Ed Brubaker's stuff, where he's dealing with like corporate America, and where he's doing stuff like he got in trouble with the Tea Party, where he had the Tea Party invent their own crazy 50s Eisenhower Captain America, which
is that is a Captain America for all our
for all your needs.
Yeah,
it's President Captain America.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
So you can't help but this guy wearing a flag and
it's
having
symbolic. I mean, it's heavily symbolic.
That's it,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
And I like the Winter Soldier and Civil War sort of start with that, and then all of a sudden they realize they can't really do that because you might alienate some people by suggesting crazy things like, maybe foreign intervention should be handled in a democratic fashion rather than just having the giant green guy smash through Nairobi.
Be the type of people who are voting for Donald Trump.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And what you have then is you have this weird thing where the first half of the movie is quite, you know, it deals with this stuff. So it has them like confronted with dead children. It has them confronted with the families of people who were hurt by the mindless violence.
This is interesting.
Wait. It gets,
I know.
You know where this is going, right? And then the second half just goes, okay, what we're doing is a buddy superhero team-up film. And you have this gigantic set-piece sequence set in, I think it's Denver Airport, in which the characters basically throw each other through buildings again, knock up planes, cause gas tanks to explode. There's a point where, say, Ant-Man, for example, picks up a truck, throws it at another superhero to have it explode, and goes, oops, I thought that was water. And you're sort of watching this, and it's meant to be, ooh, this is so funny, and you're kind of like, actually, given the film spent 15 minutes telling me that these people have caused an awful lot of collateral damage.
And are reckless.
It's maybe not the best message to send. And you have this weird thing at the end where Iron Man is meant to be functionally the bad guy, but he can't be functionally the bad guy.
Because
he's Iron Man, and Robert Downey Jr. just said he wants to do Iron Man 4. So you have this weird thing where it's absolutely unwilling to have Iron Man and Captain America have an actual disagreement on anything that matters. So it turns out to be this big emotional disagreement, and Tony Stark doesn't really believe that maybe Captain America shouldn't be like blowing up buildings in Nairobi, Kenya. He's just forced to do it by those pesky politicians and like the UN, and like this African nation called Wakanda. He doesn't really want to be enforced.
So are
this
we
thing.
Talking that Marvel tries to have his cake and eat it here?
It does, and I thought that was the same problem that it had with Winter Soldier.
Yeah, on a smaller scale in some ways in Winter Soldier.
Yes.
This is playing out on
much
larger
canvas. Because this is a
much
larger canvas,
yeah.
And its idea is at the start it's got a much broader scale.
So it's
but
probably got away with a little
Civil
slightly.
War was, Civil War was an epic arc in the comics.
Oh, in the comics, yeah.
Yeah, so to boil it down to 2.5 hours is quite difficult.
It also strips out a lot of the comic, which is great because the comic was terrible. The comic ended with Captain America and Iron Man fighting, only to realize that they weren't the true heroes when a bunch of first responders showed up.
Yeah,
that's what ends the fight. A bunch of paramedics, firemen, and police officers show up, and Captain America's like, "Oh my god, these are the real heroes."
Oh, for fuck's
sake! They're all called Marta,
just to make it better. But yeah, no. But it knows what it's doing. It's clear. It runs 2.5 hours, but it runs relatively smoothly. It's constructed moments that you are going to see on your Twitter feed or on your Tumblr,
yeah,
or on your social media until the end of time. Like, there are moments...
A lot of films are made that way now, though.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like, I mean...
No, no, and it's very... They do it very, very well.
Yeah.
Like, and you're watching it and you're going, yeah, I can tell that moment where they pause before going into battle and Captain America puts his hand on Bucky's shoulder and they share a meaningful glance. You're like, I'm going to be seeing gif sets of that until I die.
Yeah.
Or until the next film is released. So no, it's grand. It's just not as good as the hype would suggest it is.
I'll be seeing it because the Bank Holiday Weekend is a perfect time to see
it. Yeah,
so I will be seeing it this weekend
to make
at some point.
All the money.
It is,
yeah, it
yes.
And I will see it and I will report back next week with my thoughts.
Okay.
As such as they are.
Elsewhere. Not quite as a joyous experience, but one that is fundamental, is a Hungarian drama, Son of Saul.
Yes.
Saul
is
good,
baby.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll take this one then.
Yes.
Son of Saul, yeah. Okay. First thing to say is Philip, I think, is a lot more positive on this than I would be to start. He loved it, absolutely loved it, but I only merely liked it. But, having said that, this is... Laszlo Nemes, his film set in Auschwitz in 1944, I think. Yes, another Holocaust movie, just when you thought you were safe to go back to the multiplex. This is pretty full-on stuff. The comparisons being made, generally speaking, from reviews I've read, is to Klimov's Come and See, which is a Russian war film from the mid-80s, which is probably the best war film ever made. And it's relentlessly grim, but it's really, really astonishing.
And you like this less than Phil?
Yes. No, that's
okay.
This is the comparison I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it stands to that comparison. Basically, the idea is this guy called Saul, who's in this Sonderkommando, which is the kind of, I don't know what you'd call it. It's like the Jewish kind of guards that basically push other people towards their own destruction, but they get to stay alive and help out and whatever. It's that kind of weird
Vichy France type.
Yeah,
it's
ethical
quagmire.
There's a lot. It is.
Survive,
I mean, there's no way. I mean, you could even hold against people. It's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
But he's in that, and the film starts off rather extraordinarily in right in the middle of the gas chamber, which would usually be a last act kind of horror in some ways. But it's to put you right in there straight away. You're there. This has this technique that it uses, the filmmaker uses, that basically the whole film is shot in a kind of a close-up. It's basically following him all the time, what he does, close-up of his face, of his work, what he's doing. And so everything else is kind of...
So there's a focus.
Yeah, and very much so. He's there, but the horrors are around him. The techniques that he uses show that, like, there's things just out of frame, out of focus that you catch, and it kind of blurred. But you know what it is, because we all know the language of this, if you will. Like, we in the 70 years,
else,
70. Because
everybody's seen Schindler's List.
Yeah, exactly. If you've seen any documentaries.
Or Show
Hour. Yeah, exactly. And you know what you're seeing if you don't see it. So that's very suggestive and very well done in that regard. The main thing for me is that there is a plot in here. There's a plot, basically, he sees his own son who has died in the camp. And he basically wants to bury him, as opposed to kind of burning. And so the film, the narrative drive of the film is him to try and get a rabbi from within the ranks to basically bury him with dignity and all that kind of stuff. And and that takes place in kind of really torturous, whispers conversations around the edges of trying not to be killed, which is, you know, important.
A priority.
You're trying to stay alive. So that's kind of narrative drive of the film. I have a couple of issues with it. the great things of it for me, there's two great ideas in it. One is that the sound design in the film is sensational. Like, there's this clang of industrialization, and it is industrial because this is processing. It's just because it's processing the people doesn't make any less processing. It's horrendous, but the noise of it never stops, and your ears don't get a break from it for a huge chunk of the movie before it slightly changes, and that's great. But I've seen Show actually over 3 days in the IFI once, and so it's a good 9-hour shift. It's, you know, it's pretty full on. It's great, but harrowing stuff. Like, my only issue with this, and technically I've no issue with it, dramatically it works for the most part, but I at the end of it, when I came out of it and I saw the native, and I said to myself, what is it saying? What is this adding to the cultural conversation about the Holocaust, about our reactions to it, our kind of uneasy relationship with it being is it wrong to have a drama made up, some things like that. What is it saying about the Holocaust itself? Is it adding anything to the conversation? And for me, what troubles me about it is that, other than the technical aspects of it, of what it's doing and where it's placing you as the audience member and what you are seeing, it doesn't seem to say a lot beyond that. Now, I know Phillips disagreed with me. We've had a conversation about it, and he thinks it's saying a lot more than that. But I disagree. As I said, I like the film. I think it's well worth seeing. I think it's shocking all on the senses to a large degree. And it does kind of beat you about the head a bit. Yeah. So when you come over, you're a little kind of off kilter.
Yeah.
But in the cold light of day, I'm not sure what impact it will have. I'd be intrigued to see what people think of it a decade from now, perhaps.
Well, I think I haven't seen it now, I have to confess. I went to see Zootropolis or Zootopia instead.
I own it, which was definitely the wrong choice.
I had a much happier time in the cinema than Jane.
I would imagine you did.
But when you say things about, like, what does it add to cultural conversation, what I find about the Holocaust is slipping from cultural memory. Like, it's slipping from living memory at the moment, and I think that even just having a well-made film in the conversation itself is probably inherently a good thing.
It is and isn't. I mean, I think that I know what your point you're making, but I when I'm seeing something, if I'm going to sit through a film about the Holocaust again, I want, like, give me some insight, or I want to find something in either in humanity or in the filmmaker's perspective or in the way he shoots and what he's shooting for, so that I can say, okay, now I see why that exists.
Okay.
And I'm not sure there's anything there that meaty, do you know?
Yeah, no.
And it's very impressively done. I mean, this is I'm not wailing on it. There's a lot of good stuff here, a lot of really good stuff. I'm unsure of how good it actually is.
Yeah, that's I'm removed from
but
the
recommended with, but and I think in fairness, like, I mean, it's got 4 or 5 star reviews.
Well,
I mean,
the Academy Awards.
Yeah, no, but like, I mean, it's again, I'm in the minority here. I'm very used to being in this position, but
but you love Ant-Man, so that's all right.
Yeah, no. I'm saying, Ant-Man a better film than Son of Saul? Who am I to judge? But
so what you're saying is you're waiting for the day the clown cried.
I actually am. I really hope I stay alive until they release that. I'm actually dying to see it.
It's a harrowing experience and controversial choice of words.
Yeah, indeed. That's like I can't top that, really.
The other main release that's out this week is the Jake Gyllenhaal starring Demolition, directed by Jean-Marc Vallée.
Not great.
From the acclaimed
director of Wild.
The Dallas Buyers Club.
We saw the trailer for this before Mean Streets.
It's pretty much a performance. Yeah. This is like the try and get your actor an Oscar film, and the fact that it's being released in the middle of April suggests it's not a particularly successful
film. Jake Gyllenhaal, that's all he seems to be doing.
But it seems to be we've seen Nightcrawler again to do that.
No, it's not at all.
No, in terms of talking.
Is he the new Leo?
Now that Leo
has his Oscar, is it Jake's time?
But
I think Leo
picked better films. Also better directors.
Well, in fairness, this guy's got a good track record of getting Academy Award nominations.
But he's got an okay track record
when it comes to
films.
Yeah.
Which is as a filmmaker, that's where I stand on.
Like, you're not meant to be a ramp that you're sort of to get.
I mean,
into that
is why Dallas Buyers Club is fine, no more than fine.
But it's got two great central performances.
It's
And I think Wild has one good central performance. Well, two actually. Laura Dern, I think, is also pretty good. But yeah, I think the films are not great.
No.
I think the Dallas Buyers Club is better than Wild, and I think Demolition has a good first act. It's kind of like, it's how quirky is it going to be? That's the game you play during the first act.
That's worry.
Yeah, the first act is like, how quirky is this going to be? And you're like, that entertains you for about half an hour, and you're just like, okay, none more quirky. It's such a, and it's horribly like middle class guilt and responsibility and shame and stuff. And I think,
does anyone really want to see an investment banker?
Yeah, feel bad about himself.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't even want to see an investment banker. But stop that conversation right there.
I mean, so Armand White, our favorite critic here, actually made a very salient point about the release of this and now Loud in the Bones. And the argument that they are part of a delayed response to 9/11, and that both feature scenes, I believe, I haven't seen Louder Than Bones, but with One Freedom Plaza or One World Trade Center or wherever, and the idea that there is this middle class unresolved angst
that might not be completely out of the thing.
Well, an entire, you know, subsection of society got taken out in one failed swoop, you know.
And I mean, you know... Well,
somebody please think of the bankers and the investment on Wall Street. Finally, they get... What about the 1%, for Christ's sake?
I work in that industry, so the thing is...
So do I.
If it was a thing...
Your audience, Jay.
If we were based in New York...
We would know people who were there.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. So that, there is that.
I wouldn't.
So it's we love you, Jay.
We know you. I suppose I know. Maybe Morning Niall, that'll be doing a podcast with somebody else.
I got over it pretty quickly. Demolition, not great, is where we're going.
The cast, though. You've got Jake Gyllenhaal, Naomi Watts, Chris Cooper. I mean, that's...
And then it's... Yeah, but it gets really... Yeah. It's basically... It's about a man coping with the death of his wife who gets through it by writing letters to a vending machine company. That is all that you need to know about the film.
Had it been scripted by Charlie Kaufman, then we'd be off to the races.
The trailer was enough for me. It's like, I'm out.
And on that note, we'll leave it there for the week.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.